This is Mae Brussel, the second half of a one-hour program called World Watchers. I'll now continue. I'm citing an article from the Los Angeles Times written by Paul Montgomery called Neo-Nazis Enact a Not-So-Comic Opera, August 11th, 1985. Just to conclude this information about Paul Latinus, remember that Mr. Pierce, who heads the Aryan Nations, the National Nazi Party that was taken over after George Rockwell was murdered, had a PhD, and worked for the U.S. Air Force on a contract, a $38,000 contract, then went to United Technology in Connecticut, the Pratt Whitney, and had a large amount of money for them, and then went to Washington, D.C. This is the man who wrote the Turner Diaries on how to kill all the Jews in the United States and how to kill the blacks to get rid of all of them, and then went to Washington, D.C. to take over the Nazi Party, just give it a sanitized name, and connect it to the very groups that we're talking about that link directly to these people. So Paul Latinus, being a nuclear engineer, isn't any different than Mr. William Pierce, who has a PhD from Colorado and taught the university in Oregon and works for the Defense Department and the Air Force and United Technology. Incidentally, the bulk of the airplane crashes that they're trying to analyze on why they blew up or went down and crashed, the engines were made by Pratt Whitney and United Technology, and Alexander Haig was not only the head of NATO, but he was the president of Pratt Whitney United Technology Dash. It's the same firm. So when you read about these engines cracking and the planes going down, or maybe they were meant like our refrigerators and TVs and cars to have an expectancy so that by a certain year they're all fallen into the ocean. They're examining them in Great Britain. They are the company, that is the company, the one that Alexander Haig of the Defense Intelligence Agency, working with the Vatican, a Knight of Malta, Haig is still very much related to United Technology, and those are the planes that are going down this time, and they're promising problems with planes. All coincidental, you understand, but I thought I should just tell you some of the coincidences, because when they have papers from NATO, and Haig was part of NATO, and I've accused them of being behind so many or all of the coups that have taken place and the dictatorships that have come to power. So Paul Latinus is working for the Belgian government, and we have people working for our government that are committing the same kind of treason that these people want, which is, in fact, the destruction of America. So the group is called the Westland New Post to defend cultural genetic patrimony of the white race against, and I gave you the list. Now, the members of this group, called the Bureau for Zionist Affair. They have several dozen members, and they have a code room. They worked in the Belgian General Staff, and they have stolen copies of NATO messages to the Belgian Army and a decoding grid for NATO known as COSMIN, COMSIM, capital letters. Westland New Post would sell the messages from NATO and the codes to clients, including a Saudi Arabian newspaper. The Westland Post also received training from a member of the BEGAUB Security Services, BEGAUB Security Services, and among the targets that they were suspected of killing were several Soviet spies. 1 month after a practice session with these people, a couple was found dead, and the ex-paratrooper said that he had taken part in their murders. This story began with a former paratrooper arrested in Brussels who had shot his brother, and his room was filled with papers from NATO. He was part of the organization Westland New Post, which is a continuation of the policies of Adolf Hitler, and they wear the uniforms of the Waffen-SS. They're part of the Belgian government, the security services. They can murder people and still be out running their conventions. He said he took part in that murder. The man who said, this Paul Latinus, who was giving the information about Westland New Post, where the trail led to him and the Belgian government, was found hanged. At first they said it was a suicide. Later the case was reopened, and they said, the article concludes by saying, this case is like turning over a rock. insects were crawling in every direction. Well, you bet they were, and they're still crawling, but now they're sort of out in the open, and there aren't so many rocks to push around because they're becoming more visible, and they have their conventions, and nothing seems to happen. Now, the importance of those groups, I've charted out just a very simple chart that can be understood in terms of names I've used before but are new to some people, and I don't expect you to remember these names, but I'll just run off a few connections between that article, the article that preceded it, and what I'll be working on next week to show you the tie-ins. This Karl Heinz Hoffmann that's referred to in this article as being one of the known terrorist groups, the largest group, works directly with, or worked directly with, and they're both still alive, Stefano Della Calle. Stefano Della Calle has worked with Edwin Walker of the John Birch Society, a member of the John Birch Society, and Hoffmann is a co-worker in the P2 organization, the Masonic Lodge in Italy, that tried to put the neo or the Nazi government back in power, the scandal that broke open in May of 81. Hoffmann works with a Mr. Feeblecorn and a Mr. Danet, D-A-N-E-T, and Mr. Feeblecorn, and I'll do more about them next week. Now, Hoffmann, Feeblecorn, and Danet all linked down to Bolivia, to Klaus Barbie, all worked there with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia. And Klaus Barbie, of course, was the man under the tutelage of Henry Kissinger when Kissinger was in counterintelligence corps, when Barbie was allowed to get his way out of Europe with Licio Gelli, a member of the Waffen-SS who created the rat line to get them out. Our counterintelligence corps, the Vatican, the Waffen-SS, all working together long before the war was over, but the decisions had been made, and now the train was rolling down to where they took the boats to South America. And Kissinger also is in charge of Otto Skorzeny, the chief of the Odessa, the article cited when I began this program. Now, Feeblecorn worked with the death squads in Bolivia, and he worked with the people who blew up the train in Bologna. He was an agent of the United States at the Drug Enforcement Agency. As soon as he was arrested, the Drug Enforcement Agency handed him over to German intelligence and drug agencies because they sort of washed their hands of the scandal, and Barbie and Skorzeny and Feeblecorn all worked for the United States. Now, Karl Heinz Hoffmann was funded for his most violent and the largest radical organization in Europe by Gerhard Frey, F-R-E-I, from Munich, Germany. Gerhard Frey was on the telephone with Edwin Walker the day after John Kennedy was murdered. I wrote in my article in Rebel, November 22, 1983, the relationship of General Walker, Gerhard Frey, trying to create a communist story out of Lee Harvey Oswald being the patsy for shooting Kennedy. And last week on World Watchers, I cited Isaac Don Levine working with Marina Oswald, working with Mr. Krebs of the Odessa in 1939-1940 to make people pro-Hitler and anti-communist, working with Marina Oswald and John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles to make a commie story out of the murder of John Kennedy. And Gerhard Frey and Edwin Walker, of course, are closely associated through the organizations in Texas that became the nucleus of Young Americans for Freedom with Robert Morris, a Knight of the Vatican, similar to William Casey and Alexander Haig and William Buckley, who formed the Knights of Malta. And YAF is the home base of Richard Vagary, with his close links to people like Jesse Helms and Mr. Daubuisson and all the right-wing organizations. Now, I have not discussed, and I will detail in a few weeks, a group called the AVG Group by H.L. Hunt. That was the death squad in America, set up by H.L. Hunt, the John Birch Society, and General Walker. And their relationships then go to James Angleton, another Knight of Malta from the Vatican, working with Mr. Borghetti, and Oscar Skorzeny. And the connections of these people in Germany, the old Germans, the old Gestapo, with the new Germans, with the new death squads, and wearing the SS uniforms now, recycles itself right into Dallas, Texas, and all of these people, through mountains of files and connections, are linked to the murders of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. So when that little article in that Star said that they will achieve their goal by assassinations, I'm citing some of the interconnecting links to just three assassinations that changed the whole tone of America, the two Kennedys and Martin Luther King. And I'll do more on these charts because I don't expect you to remember those names at all, and I'll make them available for you, just as I've done with many of these other broadcasts, and they accompany the broadcast, and then you can see them and study them as long as you want. Now, there's a new book coming out that Tom Davis told me about. He supplies the researchers and generously looks all over this state for books that are of interest to us. He told me about a new book called Hands of Death, and this is it's described as The Startling Facts of Henry Lee Lucas. It will be out soon, and Tom will have it. It's from Prescott Press in Lafayette, Louisiana. And there's going to be a national author tour and radio and TV appearances, including Henry Lee Lucas, direct from his prison cell in Texas. Superstar Lewis is going to promote his book. Now, here's the startling facts of Henry Lee Lucas. Self-confessed murderer of over 360 people. The man who supplied poison to Jim Jones in Guyana. The man who stalked former President Jimmy Carter for over 1 year, among the most infamous killers in history. Now, when Lucas had talked about all these murders, they flew him to California about a year ago, and they allowed him to go to four grave sites, and four to six, I don't remember the number, but I do have the news accounts in my files of deaths that you can hardly keep up with, and then they flew him back to Texas. Now, there's a lot of people who don't know where members of their family are, whether they were kidnapped, whether they're alive or dead, and it would be very nice if he could have a month and go throughout California and show where these people are buried. But it is my contention that these serial killers are part of the Machiavellian plans for exactly what they're doing, and that out of every six people they kill, two are political reasons that they're killing them for, and the other four can be random, so that it doesn't appear that there's any sense and that you're purposely killing authors and labor leaders and civil rights leaders and so forth. You take out what you want and a few to boot, and so that they can do what they do best, which is a whole series of murders, and he's going to be interviewed. Now, Texas was talking about giving him the death penalty. It seems to me that they should use Lucas to go around and, instead of killing him, identify, yes, these people were killed, and at least put their minds to rest. Now, when they were talking about the Carter attempted murders, murder of Carter, I got out a few articles on the assassination plans, not all of them when Carter was president, but a few interesting ones. One is August the 4th, 1976, as soon as Carter was president, and the article is titled, Rufus Youngblood, ex-agent who shielded Johnson, joins the Carter staff. And it says, ex-Secret Service agent Rufus Youngblood shielded Johnson in the Dallas motorcade in which Kennedy was killed. He's joined the staff of Jimmy Carter, and formerly he was going to retire from the Secret Service, and after Carter's administration, he did retire in Savannah, Georgia, and then he joined Democratic presidential nominees' advance teams to handle the logistics in the Atlanta campaign office. Now, Atlanta, Georgia, is where Larry McDonald and Murder Incorporated came from, where there were direct links to the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, and Rufus Youngblood is retired in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know whether I heard that he passed away recently. I'm not sure, but this is where he was to spend the rest of his days. Now, when John Kennedy was killed at Dealey Plaza, Rufus Youngblood, many of you don't remember, were too young to know or forgot or didn't know at all, was the person who not only shielded Lyndon Johnson, but he had pillows in the car. Doesn't every vice president run with pillows as if that would save you? But he threw these pillows around LBJ, and the car was directly behind John Kennedy, and he jumped on his body to protect him. And there's pictures of him showing, going around the corner of the Texas School Book Depository in front of there. And just before John Kennedy was shot, or just while he's being shot, Youngblood has the car parked and the door is open. And the motorcade was moving around the corner. They hadn't sped up all, they weren't speeding up. The driver didn't know Kennedy was shot or he hadn't yet been shot. And the door, Lyndon Johnson's car stopped directly in front of the Texas School Book Depository and the door was open. And that was Youngblood. He had the pillows he set on Johnson and he opened the door. Now, I got out those, some of the stories, as I say, about Jimmy Carter. One of them is from Newsweek, May 21st, 1979. Was there a plot to kill Carter? Well, do you realize that that's practically the only time that we've had a political assassination in this country that they suggested a plot? Not the loner, not the grin. If Carter had been killed, there would have been a man grinning, a loner, and there would have been a diary in the hotel room. But because they caught these people before he was shot, they caught the whole team. Otherwise, again, we would have had someone like Mark David Chapman, who killed John Lennon and Artie Bremer, or Sirhan with his diary, and Patsy Lee Harvey Oswald with their diary. But they actually called it in Newsweek a plot, and another article referred to it as a plot. The Los Angeles Times had a story, Man Charged with Plot to Kill the President, and it tells about a man who had a starter pistol, a very innocent thing. And they picked him up. But the interesting thing, and many of you might remember, I did broadcast on this quite a long time ago, in May of 71. That was 4 years ago. Tape number 388, if you want to look it up. Remember the man who was arrested in Los Angeles? His name was Raymond Lee Harvey. It was Lee Harvey Oswald. So this was Raymond Lee Harvey, and he was held under $50,000 bail. And he was working with another man named Oswaldo Ortiz Espinoza. So you had this Lee Harvey, Lee Harvey as one of them and Oswaldo as the other. And they both came from Mexico and lived at a hotel right across the street where the president would come, just as Lee Harvey Oswald happened to be working in a Texas school book depository, where out of all of Texas, the motorcade would come right in front of them. These four men had come from Mexico. They didn't know where they came from or didn't have any background upon them. But they showed they had escaped from a mental hospital. They had criminal records and had been in mental hospitals and had a suspicion of a lot of burglaries, but could have had a lot of mind job. If the President Carter had been killed, they may have been the victim and still are of a lot of mind control. But it turned out that the pistol that was to be trained in MacArthur Park in Los Angeles to see how loud it was to be the diversionary. And if Lee Harvey Oswald were a diversionary, and actually that Italian Carcano, he didn't shoot or hold or touch, there's no sign or link of him to that gun, but somebody was a diversionary, then the crossfire came, and the crossfire could be the silencers. And what they were playing was three people to do the shooting and one a diversionary. So it's exactly like the John Kennedy assassination script. Not exactly, but there's a lot of crossovers or seem to overlap in the techniques that would happen if they wanted to kill Jimmy Carter. Another story, May 11, 1979, in the San Francisco Examiner, evidence now indicates a four-man plot. Again, the word plot. And it says the Secret Service didn't take this seriously. They weren't going to do anything. They thought the man was just drunk and he had a funny gun that didn't shoot anything. And at the time, they said, we didn't believe the story. But he admitted to have been drinking, but the story began to hold together that there was more information. And as it opened up, he was linked to these other men at the hotel. And it turned out that there was more than one person, and they put them in. I don't know whatever happened to these people. It says Espinoza Ortiz agreed with Harvey, Lee Harvey, that they knew two Mexicans at one hotel who had rifles. Harvey told the agents he was told of the plot by three others in a room at the hotel, and he understood they would fire the fatal shot, and he would be the diversion with the starter pistol. So so much for that. The one of the men has a bunch of aliases. He'd been in the United States for 20 months, but they don't bother to explain why four Mexicans would want to kill Jimmy Carter. And then there was another long article in the Globe showing a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald and John Kennedy, titled, Was There a Plot to Kill Carter in This Hotel? Calling attention to Lee Harvey and the other one's named Oswaldo. You couldn't help but notice it. And that was one plan to try and kill the president. There were three men from Mexico. But Mr. Lucas says, and he was basically from Texas, although the Kennedy assassination involved highly trained assassins from Oaxaca, Mexico, who were brought in by Division 5 of the FBI. November the 7th, 1976, there was a story, Texan charged for Carter threat. And this is about a man on $25,000 bond by the name of Thomas Gargan, who is from Texas. And, of course, Lucas's home base is Texas. Then there was another interesting story about Texas, two other death plots planned from Texas. One was from El Paso, Texas. A federal warrant was issued for an accused Texas man. Secret Service agent said he paid $10,000, having to be counterfeit money to have Carter assassinated. Now, these were hired assassins, so Lucas may not have been out doing them all. He may have been looking in the crowd and stalking. But William Rodney Etheridge, 25, of Odessa, Texas, was arrested, and he was in custody on various charges, and he was held for questioning. Another fugitive from justice wanted in Utah, and he was involved with the assassination, again called a death plot, but a different one than the other, referring to plots in America. You don't realize that they ever use those words, but they do. Another story about Texas involves a suspect in Carter death threat. This was July 16th, 1980, San Jose Mercury, a man named Majed Khamis, K-H-A-M-I-S. A 21-year-old man was sought by the Secret Service for threatening to kill President Carter and Senator Edward Kennedy. He was taken into custody in San Francisco. He's a student. He didn't give out any information of himself. Witnesses saw him, according to the Secret Service, making threats in Dallas, Texas, and reported it to the federal officials. He'd gone on to San Francisco, and then they set the bail for $1 million. And he was sent back to Texas, and his home base is Irving, Texas. Of course, that's where Lee and Marina Oswald were. Lee rented a room in Irving, Texas. And they went to his room, and there was a search warrant in Irving, Texas, where they found a variety of weapons and PLO propaganda. Weapons seized two 3.357 caliber revolvers, a deer rifle, a shotgun, and two devastated hand grenades. Now, William Sullivan of the FBI, of Division 5 of the FBI, was shot as being a moose or a deer up in New England at the time the House Select Committee was investigating assassinations. This fellow just coincidentally had a deer rifle. But the reason I mention Sullivan is that after they went into his apartment, he shared with four other people who were Jordanian nationals, Khamis told the Secret Service that he was captain in the PLO and had committed 100 murders, including the slayings in Irving, Texas, of two Lebanese students aged 18 and 20, who caused trouble for the PLO. Now, getting back to Atlanta, Georgia, and Larry McDonald and Murder Incorporated, I wrote about their relationship in my Rebel in the Hustler article on the Korean Airline and Larry McDonald, the organization known as Murder Incorporated, with the links of killing politicians, the goal of the Odessa, and people for political purposes. And I talked about Mr. George Habash in Lebanon and the PLO organization. It was Mark David Chapman who went to Lebanon for 6 months before he came back and then went to Hawaii and then took some trips and ended up in front of the Dakota Hotel when John Lennon was murdered. So just to say your PLO doesn't mean anything. But he said he did 100 assassinations for political purposes, and Mr. Lucas was behind 360. So was Mr. Khamis working with Lucas, or could they shoot for the government to protect the assassins? People like William Sullivan, just with the deer rifles, he was mistaken for one of those deers and just offed instead of being able to testify or to cover up or to perjure or whatever before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, investigating John Kennedy's murder and Martin Luther King's murder. So Khamis showed the Secret Service a poster of Jimmy Carter with a bullseye drawn on the face. He practiced throwing knives at the poster. I've never heard about these people. I don't know where their trials are. He had $1,000 cash. So he comes from Dallas and Irving, Texas. He's in San Francisco, $1 million bail. then they just fade away in the landscape. That's how they can do 100 murders or 360 murders. You know, well, Lucas is sitting in jail. He's done his quota. But Camus may have a few more to go. I didn't ever read that he went to jail or was deported or anything like that. So when Lucas brags about all the murders and having a part in stalking Jimmy Carter, I just pulled out related, just a few assassination attempts, the ones from Mexico, the one from Waco, Texas, the one from Odessa, Texas, and Irving, Texas, and Mr. Camus from Dallas, Texas, and show the locale of these people and how the nucleus for death plots goes out from the United States just like it does from Germany and Brussels in Belgium and all the other countries in Europe that are developing the Nazi organizations already well set up in South America, that we do in fact have these death squads in this country. Now, speaking of death squads, and for the remaining time, I don't have too much time left to get into it. I've talked about Simon Wiesenthal covering up the Colonia Dignidad, where all the Nazis train. And Jack Anderson, I often cite his articles, one in 1979, August the 3rd, about the Nazis, Nazi war criminals from Germany, training in South America in at Colonia Dignidad, and their role in the execution of Chilean exile leader Orlando Letelier, and their role in killing Mr. Allende and putting dictator Pinochet into power. Jack Anderson is wonderful at talking about these members of the Luftwaffe and the Nazis. And I've cited many times on the air the connections of George Bush as CIA director to the murder of Orlando Letelier and to Colonia Dignidad and to Murder Incorporated, the very Odessa. This is the man who's sitting as vice president of the United States with those direct links to the Odessa organizations and the Nazi killers, and he's a part of those. Another example of their death squad activity was the murder of Terry Santana. I don't remember if I talked about her, but at the time she was murdered, she was helping two writers, Don Dingus and Saul Landau, write a book on the murder of Orlando Letelier that was called Assassination on Embassy Row. This woman was a good investigative reporter. She was a political activist. In December of 1982, rags were found in her apartment, the fifth floor upstairs, with gasoline, inflammable fluid, and this poor woman was burned to death on the fifth floor of an apartment. And the New York City police said it was probably a suicide, even though there were suspicious circumstances, and she was helping expose the very murder that George Bush was director of the CIA when it was happening. The Guardian in New York had an article about her December the 16th, 1982. The National Catholic Reporter had an article about her, a commentary on her work and her political activism. And they said, among other things, the suspicions were centered on the existence of rags soaked with inflammable fluids in the apartment and the involvement in looking into a murder of the joint FBI New York City Terrorist Task Force. They were formed to probe political activists, radical groups, third world groups, and the New York Medical Examiner said she died of inhalation of smoke, even though there were these rags around there that indicated that somebody had set the fire. At the time she was killed, she was helping investigate the right-wing anti-terrorist Cubans, the terrorist Cubans, the anti-Castro Cubans, the death squads that were formed by the CIA and Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson, and George Bush was CIA director over those men. She was investigating, and she was an expert on those particular people, known for her work in studying the police state in El Salvador, the death squads in El Salvador. So she was burned. This was 1982, and the police wanted to cover it up as if she would put gasoline on a rag and burn herself, even though she was with people practically up till the evening of her death, and there was no indication she was suicidal. She was working with the Mary Knoll Films Project, and, you know, there were the nuns that were killed in El Salvador, and she was trying to help them. I wanted to just read you a couple of pages called The New Order, which is the group, they are the group up in Seattle, the other group in South America, from a book called The Nazi Legacy, Klaus Barbie and the Fascist Connections. It's written by Neil Asherson, and Mr. Linklater and Isabel Hilton. I'll do it next week because it goes into the Fiancés of Death, the death squads, the people our government is, they're working with, the murder of Orlando Letelier, and the crux of George Bush, Letelier, the South American Nazis, and the German Nazis that I just cited that article about, because Stefano Della Calle is one of the main contacts. He's still alive. He's in Peru now, and he's causing the Maoists to have a lot of violence whereby a dictatorship could be put into power, and they can kill federal agents, and then the federal agents retaliate against the terrorists. Stefano Della Calle has infiltrated himself among the native population in Peru, and all that can end with that is death, death squads, and military dictatorships that he's very good putting together. In this book on Klaus Barbie and the New Order, it tells about Calle's contacts into Spain, working with Lopez Rega of the Argentina's three deaths, the AA death squads, his work with the DINA police, working with Michael Townley and helping with the murder of Orlando Letelier, the former ambassador of Allende of Chile. And then these people, as I say, go back to the Nazi connections in Italy and in France and in Belgium and Germany, and the British Nazis directly linked to back to the United States, the Aryan Nations, and the Order, whose trial that group, 11 are on trial now, 11 have pleaded guilty, and one is on the lam. The one on the lam is probably the Drug Enforcement Agency of the CIA. But I'll have to get back to this next week. Enough of that unpleasant subject for 1 week. We'll put it away, and I'll be continuing along those lines next week. This is Mae Brussel, and you take care, and keep reading those newspapers right along with me. Bye-bye.